By the way, have you seen all the interesting things that they're doing these days about light? Did you see that mirror that Russia shot up in the outer space? It was to get more light from the moon so they could shoot it into Russia and Canada. But it kind of folded up like a broken umbrella, so that didn't work. But I noticed in Newsweek today that they have some scientists in Cambridge, Massachusetts, had figured a way to slow down light. How fast does light travel? Speed of light, how fast? How fast is it?
3 times 10^8 meters per second.
How much?
3 times 10^8 meters per second.
Oh, my word. And that translates to 186,282 miles per second. And they have slowed down light, these scientists have slowed down light to 38 miles an hour. Can you imagine getting in this bus to go to Glen Eyrie and saying to the bus driver, hey, can't you drive as fast as the speed of light? At least 38 miles an hour. But what is light to you and me? When you think, when Jesus said, you are light, what was he talking about? Are you talking? I didn't wear my hearing aid. Light is fast, travels fast. You've established that. What else? Helps you to see where you're going. Makes things visible. And in this particular case, it makes who visible? God. It makes God visible, and light is equal in this particular passage to your good deeds. That's light. Now, there's a hint in that passage that we can do something to the light that makes it null and void. And what would be that? Put it under a bushel. Or hide it. Have you ever done this? You wake up, say hello to your Christian roommate, put your bowl on your head, and then you run out, have breakfast with your Christian friends, and then you put that bowl back over and run to class and sit by your Christian friends. And then you put that bowl over and you run to lunch with your Christian friend. And that's basically what? Hiding light. When we are having some kind of parallel culture along with the world, instead of mixing in, lighting up where we are. Now, you notice a couple of statements here about salt and light, because sometimes we have a tendency to say, but I'm just one person. What difference is that going to make? Notice this statement, you can see a small candle flame from how far away? From 30 miles away on a clear, dark night. You could see a candle flame from here to Oklahoma City on a clear, dark night. Now, I said this in Tennessee a couple of weeks ago, or a couple of months ago, actually, and a fellow in the back raised his hand and said, you can see a lighted cigarette from 150 miles. I said, you can't? And with your naked eye? And he goes, oh, no, submarine, radar. But even without help, you can see a light, a candle, for a long way. And notice this about salt. You can taste 0.04. What is that? 0.04 of an ounce of salt in how much water? 530 quarts, excuse me, of water. Now, my question is, in an age like this, your age, Neil Postman tells us in the book Amusing Ourselves to Death that you are the TV culture. In an age like this, Herbert Hinden tells us in the book The Age of Sensation that basically your group has fired Freud and the narcissistic disorder has taken over. So this generation supposedly is self-absorbed. And in an age like this, where Anthony Storr in Music in the Mind says, You are the first generation that's ever been able to listen to music 24 hours a day. And since that's true of you, I want you to remember what we talk about. And you may say, oh, I don't remember a thing. She didn't sing it. So we're going to just play a clip here on what we're talking about tonight. Let's see. Who can get the light? I don't know. Can it work with the lights on? Uh-oh, we're not there.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes his home. So carry your candle, run to the darkness, seek out the hopeless, confused and torn.
There you have it. Now, if Jesus, when he walked out on the face of the earth 2,000 years ago and looked around and said, I see a lot of things decaying. I see a lot of bloom. That's why I want to call you people salt and light. My question is, do you still see that? When you walk on the campus, when you read the Wall Street Journal, when you read Newsweek, do you still see gloom and decay? Would that still be true? What is going on in the news this week that would indicate that that's still true? Who is the character named Bin Laden? Who is that? A terrorist. So we still have some pretty dark things going on. What's happening in Jasper, Texas? The trial of a murderer. We still have... And do you think there's anything going on here that would indicate that there's some decay in lives, some broken hearts? I think so. And consequently, since we are salt, we are light, we need to figure out what are people talking about? Because I want to sprinkle some salt into those conversations. Not just pile it so that they just gag or just shine the light so people's eyes are stung. But what do people talk about so I'll know how to shine light, how to sprinkle salt? Tell me about five or six things that you heard talked about this week on campus. And just write those down there. And you, what are some of those things? Did anybody call home for money? Did anybody borrow money? Anybody trying to figure out how to get more money? Did you talk about money at all? Yes, okay, money would be one. What else? Did you guys or girls talk about the opposite sex at any point this week? Just put opposite sex down. What else did you talk about? What? Classes. What else? Classes and study habits. I had lunch with somebody that talked about work today. Good work. What else? Uh-huh. What else?
Spring break.
Spring break. Okay. Entertainment. Spring break. Something different. What's that? Okay. The big foreign policy forum that was held here today. So politics, money, sex, work habits, study. What else? Friends. Well, that's fine. Okay. Now, how are you going to sprinkle ideas about the power Jesus has into those lives? I knew a girl named Becky in Colorado Springs, and she was a nurse. And she said, what I'm getting ready to do is just give you an example of some ways to do that. Sprinkle salt and light into your conversations. And Becky had a way of not just answering the immediate question she got, but finding out what is the real question behind the question. Because there's usually a statement behind a question. Have you noticed that? If you haven't, start looking for that. This girl came up to her during a break at the hospital and she said, "What do you think about the Virgin Mary?" She said, "Well, I think that's one of the most interesting questions anyone has asked me lately. Why do you ask me that?" She said, "Well, you know, we've been talking about you, and one thing we noticed about you is you're pretty religious. So I thought I'd ask you that question." She said, "Pretty religious? Why would you describe me as religious?" She said, "Well, you know, we noticed something else about you, that you know a lot about the Bible." And at that point, she said, "I went to a parochial school, but I didn't learn very much about the Bible. So that's why I asked you this question." She said, "So really what you're asking me is, you really want to know more about the Bible?" She shook her head. She said, "Really? You know, most people think the Bible is irrelevant. Why are you asking me about the Bible?" And then big tears filled up her eyes. And the truth finally came out, what the issue was. She said, "I am having so much difficulty in this relationship I'm in with this fellow that I think I love. And I've tried everything. And I'm desperate, and I'm thinking maybe the Bible will help." So Becky said, "Well, would you like to meet with me in Bible study?" She goes, "Oh, I was so hoping you would ask me that." She said, "And could my sister come too, and my mom?" Now, if Becky had answered her question, "What do you think of the Virgin Mary?" Do you think she'd ever gotten to the real question? I don't think so. And so finally Becky asked her, "And what do you think we're going to gain by studying the Bible?" And she said quietly, "Hope." So one way you can be salt and light is to ask questions. Another way is just spend time with non-Christians. Because this, we are just couriers of this good news. We don't have to make this stuff up. We just take it as we are salt and we are light. So another way you can do this is tithe your time. And I know how busy everybody here is. And when I was here, I was surrounded by Christians. And as Jim Peterson said, sometimes you have to pole vault over a group of Christians to spend time with non-Christians. And I decided at one point when I was challenged to tithe my time, you know what I mean by that? Like if you spend 40 to 60 hours studying and in class, then you should tithe your time and spend about 4 to 6 hours with a non-Christian or with some non-Christians. So I decided, okay, I'm going to do that. And I asked somebody that I thought had a lot of traffic in their room, can I just come over and spend some time with you? And she said, okay. And so I would just go over there. And I would play backgammon or whatever was going on there. You know, and I'm there, you know, my 4 hours thinking, oh, here I'm playing a game and everybody's going to hell. I don't know. I don't know if this is smart. But, you know, I just happened to be in that room one day when someone, her roommate, Kay's roommate, yelled from across the room, I hate the Bible. And my first inclination was to run. But I thought better of that, and I had read that sometimes the loudest people have the deepest longing. So I walked over to her and I said, that is so interesting to me that you hate the Bible. Could I take you for a pizza and you tell me why you hate it so much? She said, well, I am hungry. So we walked down from her high-rise dorm. We went across the street and got some pizza. And as we were going, I was trying to find out about her. She was interested in pre-law. She was and very interested in intellectual integrity. So when we set our trays down, I said, Lindy, the last time you examined the primary biblical documents, what did you hate so much about it? She said, what? What did you say? Did you just ask me if I've ever read the Bible? I've never read the Bible. I said, wow, that does not smack of intellectual integrity to me to condemn a book you never read. Would you read it? She said, yes, no one's ever asked me to read the Bible. How hard can this be, being salt and light? So she went back. I went home. I said to all my housemates, let's pray. Lindy's going to read the Bible. One of the more practical ones said, does she have a Bible? I thought, you pray. I'll go see if she got a Bible. So I knock on the door. Lindy, you got a Bible? She goes, no. I said, how are you going to read? I'll go buy you one. Now, I have, 17, 18 Bibles at home. But and Barna says that every one of us has about 3.3 Bibles, and we're still biblically literates, right? I mean, we think the epistles are the apostles' wives. But I bought her a Living Bible, and many of you may go, well, that is not the Bible, you know. That is a paraphrase. I know it. But I wanted her to think that God talked just a little bit like she did. And so she began to read, and she called me one night and she said, listen, I'm reading. You asked me if I would be willing to adopt this philosophy. And so my question is, I mean, from the part I've read so far, it seems to me in these Gospels, you know the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Olivia, Newton, John, you know the Gospels. Well, in these Gospels, it seems to me that you're supposed to love everybody. And I basically hate most of these girls that live on this floor. So do I have to love everybody? Now, I don't know how you answer questions like that when a non-Christian asks you if you're supposed to act like a Christian. Oh, did they want me to sing? Is that music? But I said, I don't know. Hey, I'm for you. I'm for God. You just keep reading. She kept reading. One night she called me and she said, Carolyn, I can't find it in here anywhere, but do you think I should stop smoking pot while I'm reading this Bible? I said, well, I'm for you. I'm for God. Just keep reading. Now, I know that some of you out there are prophets and go, you should have turned her in. But she kept reading. And one night she called me after about 3 months of reading. And she said, you know, I do not understand a lot of the formal stuff y'all do, going to church, that kind of stuff, but there's one person I really like in this book, and it's Jesus. could you come over here and talk to me? Oh, yeah, be right there. So sometimes you just have to shine some light. It may cost you a little bit of money, a little bit of time, and then be salt along the way. I wasn't going to tell this story, but I happened to see someone here who knew how to do that. And that's Kim, married to the great Eddie Foster now. But one time when she was in school here, loving those people on her floor, she came to me. Was this embarrassing, I tell you? And she said, what can I do about this one person on my floor that's ruining her life? She's involved with one of the football players, and from all I can understand or all I can remember, the football player was not kind to her. So he would come get in the dorms, spend the night with her, and then he would talk rudely to her, destroying her image of herself. And then he would go away on these football tourneys or whatever, and bring her back gifts. And usually when somebody is asking me a question about a non-believer and a situation, I'm trying to pray, God, is there something in Scripture that relates to this? And I happen to think about the time that David got involved with Bathsheba. And I mentioned that to Kim. And I said, remember what Samuel did, the prophet, the person who loved God and was friends with David? He told a story. She said, okay, thank you. And she left. I said, where are you going, Kim? She said, I'm going to write a story. I'll write a story. Okay. And that afternoon, she called. I don't know if she remembers. She called, and we prayed before she went over there. And then she went to share this story. And this was something of the story. I'm not sure I got it all right, but something of the story that Kim wrote. she said, and she went down to this girl's room and said, I'm trying to finish this theme, and could you help me with the ending? I don't have the ending. She said, okay, what is it? And she said, well, here's the story. The story is about this princess who got involved with a prince. And he got into her castle, and he got into her chamber, and he got into her bedchamber, and all the ladies in waiting were mad at her. Everybody on the floor was mad at this girl. He would go away and how do you think we should end that? She said, I don't know, but I tell you one thing, that princess would be a fool not to take that king up on his offer. And then Kim graciously said, you are the princess. And from that confrontation, they were able to go out and share the gospel together, double date. And those things don't always create at that moment another citizen of heaven, but it does plant a seed. It does shine light. It does sprinkle salt. Is that sort of it? So what I have asked about six of you, if we can do this in about 2 or 3 minutes, those you six who have, if you'll come up to these mics, and can these mics be turned on? Okay. They have passages from the Gospels. One of the greatest models of talking to people we have is Jesus. All of these are conversations Jesus had with somebody. They're going to tell us who Jesus was talking to and what he was talking about, the topic and what he said. Okay, you want to go ahead there? Just pick up a mic. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, mine was Luke 19. Jesus was speaking to Zacchaeus. And what all we want? Who he said? Okay. And,
what were they talking about?
Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus, even though he was a known sinner, and Jesus wanted to spend time with him. And Jesus' message in verse 10, it says, "For the Son of Man came to seek and save what was lost."
That's good. He said to a lost man, I'd like to go to dinner. I'd like to eat out of the same bowls with you. I'd like to do lunch with you. Have you said that recently to a lost friend of yours?
Okay, mine is John 4, 1-30. And it's about the woman at the well. And that's who Jesus was talking to.
Mm-hmm.
And
the topic? What was the topic? What did they talk about?
The four things?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He was talking about the mountains and theology.
Water?
Water and insects.
Okay. So that was hard for us. Jesus was talking to this woman about sex. When he said, go get your husband, she said, I don't have one. And don't you think he must have said, that's right, darling, you don't, because the guy you're living with is not your husband. And he was Jewish, so he probably didn't say darling, but he did talk to her.
I had Matthew 9, 27 through 31, and this is a story about two blind men who came to Jesus to be healed. And Jesus said, do you believe that I am able to do this? And they said, yes, we believe. And he touched them and said, according to your faith, it will be done to you. And they were healed. And I think the main topic is faith.
Good. That's good. He didn't talk a lot about what was wrong. How'd you get blind? Can you see at all? Have you seen a good ophthalmologist lately? No, he just talked about his faith.
I had Mark 6:30 through 44. If you haven't read it, go buy a Bible because it's the reading of the 5,000. The feeding of the 5,000, and everybody knows that story. And Jesus is talking to the apostles about trying to find food for these 5,000 people who had followed him up into this remote area where he was teaching them. And he told them, you go do it. You get them something to eat. And they couldn't believe that he was asking them to do that, that they couldn't understand how it could be done. I think the main theme is faith and obedience.
Right. Because sometimes, don't you wonder, how can that be done? How can I be salt and light on this campus? Thank you.
Okay, the next one is John chapter 20, verses 24 through 29, and Jesus is speaking to Thomas. And the topic he's speaking to Thomas about is doubt. In these verses, it's after Jesus has come back, and Thomas says, he says in verse 25, the other disciples were with Jesus, and Thomas says, he doesn't believe that Jesus has come back, and he says, unless I've seen the nails, the marks in his hands, and put my finger where the nails were, and put my hand into his side, I'm not going to believe it. And then in verse 29, in the end, Jesus, for a second time, Thomas was with Jesus, and Jesus said, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed.
Okay, mine is John 8, 3 through 11, and this is where Jesus is talking to the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, and they're talking about the woman caught in adultery, and so they're discussing that, and then Jesus poses the question to them, if any one of you is without sin, let him be first to throw a stone at her, and then he stoops down and writes on the ground, and they go away one at a time. She's left standing alone, and then he says, women, where are they? Has no one condemned you? And she replies, no one, sir. And he says, then neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin.
Okay, great. Thank you. You can just drop those right there. It's time to go. So I just want to tell you one more story, and then we're out of here, or we're downstairs to eat, or whatever y'all do. And maybe we'll get to those 12 practical guides some other day, another way. One other thing I want to emphasize is in being salt and being light, I would encourage you to have as your motive to, and I learned this from Billy Hank's book called Everyday Evangelism. He encourages us to look for what people love and draw them from what they love to the love of God. And that many times you can look at people's clothes, especially on a campus, and see something like, this is mind, body, desire, soul, truth, spirit, just do it. Did you buy that? So is that a music group?
That would be Nike.
Nike. Oh, you like Nike. You love Nike stuff. Okay, so we talk a little about Nike and why he likes Nike, and then somehow I figure out how to draw that to the love of God. He loves good, classy clothes, okay? And so you can look at, now he's, is that, what does that say? Oklahoma something or other? University? Oh, okay. So if he were out and about, I would know, oh, I bet he goes to Oklahoma University. And I talked to him about that. I got on a plane one day and sat down by this woman that had sort of gone into her metallic age like me. Silver hair, mine's chemically dependent, and gold teeth, lead feet, many other things. And I was looking around. She didn't have any little, you know, T-shirts on. So I saw a pair of wings on her. I said, oh, now they give those to kids, I think, on the planes. So I thought she was taking it to her grandchild. I've never known a grandmother that didn't love her grandchild. True? So I said, I bet that you're taking that toy to your grandchild. She said, this is not a toy. I was a pilot in World War II. I said, you got to be kidding. I didn't even know there were women pilots in World War II. She said, if you read very much, you'd know that. Now, at this point, should I turn to her and say, lady, did you know that I used to teach speed reading? Do you know that I have a master's degree in English? No, that's not important. At this point, I'm trying to think, what is it in Christianity that relates to what she loves, which is flying? And I thought of faith. So I said, could you talk to me a little bit about faith and flying? And she did, after a while. She started talking about that. And as she was talking, I thought something she said reminded me of Abraham. So I mentioned Abraham. She said, no, no. Don't talk to me about Abraham. He was a pimp, wasn't he? Inside, I was like a Charles Schultz Lucy screaming, don't call Abraham a pimp. But outwardly, I turned to her and said, how did you get that? I missed that in my reading. And she said, didn't Abraham give his beautiful wife to that head of state? I said, yeah, he did. Then I tried to take up for Abraham. I said, he didn't get any money for that, though. She said, oh, yes, he did. He got a lot of loot for that. And at this point, again, students, when you come up against so many walls, you just have to say, I don't know, but. Never say, I don't know, but. I don't know, but. I don't know, but. I'll run over and ask Max. I don't know, but. I'll go to seminary if you can wait 4 years. I don't know, but. I'll buy a book. I don't know, but. I'll check some tapes out. I said, I don't know, but it seems to me that even way back then, God used flawed people just like he's using today to get his message. And that rang true to her. So she started talking about God. But have you noticed people will talk about God till the cows come home? No cow has ever come to my home, so I think that's a long time. So I started talking about Jesus, and she said, wait a minute, you've changed the subject on me. I said, no, no, no. Jesus is the only way to God, so we're talking about the same thing. She said, where did you hear that? Television evangelist? Oh. And I said, no, it's in the scriptures. She said, where? And at that moment, I sat there like I just had a fresh frontal lobotomy. I said, I can't remember. Now I remember it's John 14:6, but at the moment I couldn't. And the Holy Spirit always rescues us when we're trying. That lady reached down and took her card out of her purse and handed it to me. And she said, if you ever find that is scripture, would you write me? Oh, yes, I will. Try to be more salt, more light. Would you stand with me? And I would like to ask you, students, I would like to challenge you to pass the salt, turn on the light tomorrow, wherever you are.